I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is David Linden.
Good morning.
Good morning, David. It's always nice to see you. It's a couple of weeks ago you were here.
Yes.
Yeah, which is, you know, time just goes so fast.
When you're having fun.
Yeah, exactly. And today we're very, very fortunate. We have Andrew Lamkin with us. And Andrew is an elder law attorney, but a little bit more specific than that, he specializes in special needs planning. And today, unfortunately, with the amount of money that's being left due to appreciation in real estate, et cetera, there's a lot of things that have to be taken care of when you have a child or even a grandchild in special needs that you can make some advanced plans for them. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
No, it's a pleasure, and thank you, because this topic is very, very important. What I'd like to start is, and I have some questions, but before we go with the questions, just give a little overview of yourself and how you got involved in special needs.
Well, I'm an attorney. My office is in Plainview.
Okay.
I'm a sole practitioner. And when I got out of law school about 10 years ago, I got a job with an elder law attorney.
Okay.
And he showed me the ropes and taught me a lot about elder law and explained the importance of planning and protecting assets for seniors. And certainly with the population aging the way that they are, and you know, it's an important business. So I really enjoy it. It's great to work with families and seniors and protecting assets and making sure that everybody has the proper documentation lined up so that, you know, we try to reduce fighting in the family. We try to make sure that everything is seamless for the family when somebody passes. In terms of special needs planning, it's really a part of elder law. And, you know, special needs planning comes in when you have a beneficiary of your estate who has a disability and receives government assistance, whether it be Medicaid or SSI.
Okay, terrific. And you know, I believe when you get these things done, I mean, at the end of the day, people, you know, besides doing this with the town, I'm a financial advisor. And at the end of the day, it's not how much money you've earned, it's how much you've protected. That's really what it comes down to.
How much you keep.
Great how point. Much you keep.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start off with a question, and we're going to shoot around. But here's a question. A lot of people have a lot of money in their IRAs, you know, 401ks that get rolled over into IRAs, et cetera. You can't take the money out. You want to do your minimum distributions. But you have either a child, make it a child. You have an adult child with special needs, and you have two other children, and you have all three as beneficiaries. Okay? Now, of course, if he's getting benefits from the state, what happens to that as soon as he gets his inheritance, or can something be done to protect it? Would the state come in saying, okay, you've been in a facility, or is it his money? How does a person protect their adult child with special needs?
It's a great question, and I'm going to answer that in a couple of ways.
Absolutely. I don't want to be too technical. Yeah. I want you to answer it, but that is something that I've heard.
It depends on the asset. Now, you brought up an IRA. An IRA, if you're taking out the distributions, then it's not considered an asset for Medicaid purposes. So if somebody had $100,000 in an IRA, it is a protected asset as long as you're taking out the distributions. And one thing that a lot of people don't know is that if you're on Medicaid, you have to take out a different type of an increased distribution. You know, when you're over 70 and a half, as you know, as a financial advisor, somebody takes out a distribution based on life expectancy as determined by the IRS. If you're on Medicaid, Medicaid is going to determine the amount, and Medicaid has a different actuarial table than the IRS, and they make you take out a higher amount. So an IRA is not necessarily a bad asset to leave to a disabled individual. It is going to increase their income.
Okay.
But there are ways to protect the income after the fact. Really what you need to do when you're planning is you look at all of your assets, you look at your family situation, and you map out exactly how you want things to flow. And, you know, there's no blanket answer. Just leave that person the IRA.
Right,
and
right.
Maybe it's better to leave the IRA to one of your other children.
You said something there which I didn't understand. In Medicaid planning, if you have already started taking out distributions, your IRA is safe.
Correct.
But if you haven't?
If you haven't?
Right. If you haven't,
then you would start when you're
170 and a half.
No, but I mean, if you started taking distributions at 65, is it safe then?
The IRA is a protected asset. See, when you apply for Medicaid, Medicaid is going to look at your assets and your income.
Mm-hmm.
The IRA, let me back up.
Yeah.
Assets include, you know, maybe the equity in your house.
Okay, yeah.
bank accounts, checking, savings, money markets, CDs, stocks, investments. IRAs, as long as you're taking the proper distribution, is not part of the asset.
But if you haven't taken a distribution yet,
when you apply for Medicaid, yeah. you have to start.
Okay, that's okay. That was my question.
They wouldn't look in the past. No. Okay, it would be when you apply.
No, I thought you might lose it. You don't lose it no matter what. Then it's just okay. I thought if you haven't taken a distribution, it becomes an asset.
No, you start when you apply, and whatever the distribution is that you take,
I get you.
Is considered income.
Okay. Did you want to say something, David? I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. So you've got this adult child, and you're leaving the IRA to that adult child, the special needs child. But don't you, or should there be some provision to administer it? This person cannot administer himself or herself. There has to be somebody, a guardian, or watch, somebody to look over, to take care of.
Yeah, David, that's a great point. And there's really two sides of what we call special needs planning. There's one is financial, how to set up your estate so that if your disabled child is going to inherit, they inherit the right way. The other side of it is guardianship or power of attorney. Now, just because somebody might be receiving government benefits does not mean that they do not have the capacity to execute a power of attorney. So that's always the best way to go. Try to see if somebody could execute a power of attorney. If they can't, which oftentimes they cannot, then you might have to go through guardianship, and the guardian would be the person to administer the distributions.
But there should be a person to take care of this person, the financial, make the financial decisions for this person who is and carry him out, this person who is incapable of doing it for himself or herself.
And that would be the guardian, yes.
Now, we'll continue on that. Talking about guardians. Now, a guardian is different than a trustee.
Yes.
Okay, just explain that. So,
a trustee is somebody that you appoint to manage a trust, and, you know, in lay terms, a trust is in a way like a family business.
Okay.
So a trustee is essentially the president or CEO of the business, and it's really just to manage assets that are placed in the trust. A guardian is really to manage the affairs of somebody's life.
Okay.
There's guardian of the person, and there's guardian of the property, and in most cases, we have somebody appointed to be guardian of the person and property. What that means is, as guardian of the person, they can make medical decisions, they can choose the place of abode, they can, you know, make those types of personal decisions, you know, medication. They talk to the doctors about potential surgeries, or, you know, if the person's going to live in a group home, or eventually, you know, unfortunately, a nursing home, or
right,
things
right.
like that. And then guardian of the property is to manage finances, discuss or contact Social Security, be the representative payee for any income that comes in from Social Security. Manage assets like David was mentioning with the IRA. If the person is left with money, the guardian of the property would be mm-hmm. would manage that.
Is there ever a situation where a person can be both guardian and trustee?
Yeah, and that's up to the parents that do the planning. You know, and that's no different than somebody that's 35 years old with two young children that just do a simple will because they have young kids. You can appoint somebody to be the guardian for your children, and you can
in the event that both
yeah. parents pass, right. and you can appoint somebody to be the guardian, be the trustee of their money. And you know, every family is different. So sometimes, you know, you have a family member who's great with people and great with medical decisions, but you don't want that person to be in charge of the money. So you could have a different person to be in charge of the money. Sometimes you'd rather have it be the same person. And that's every client I have is different in that
right.
regard. You have to look at your own situation and think what's best.
That I've seen many times over the years. You know, and I tell people all the time, you know your family.
Yeah.
And just because you have an older son, you know, doesn't mean he's the genius. I mean, he may be wonderful taking care of you, but lose all the money. And then, you know, you have a third or a fourth child. Oh, that's the kid. That might be the more caring, and there's nothing wrong. And nobody can tell you that. I mean, Andrew can go and sit down and tell you what to do, but only you know your family and say, Andrew, he might be an MBA and this, that, and the other thing. I don't trust him. And there's nothing wrong with that, because you have to, once
you're
you
right.
put these papers together, you have to go to sleep at night saying, I did the best I can for my family.
I tell clients, whether they're doing special needs planning like this, or they're engaging in just, you know, general estate planning. I can only tell you what you need to think about. I'm not telling you who to appoint.
Right, exactly.
And it's like you say, you know, you might not trust somebody with the money. You could have co-guardians as well, David.
Yeah.
You could have two people, and you could have co-trustees. And if you didn't have two people, you could appoint an attorney or an accountant, or you could have a corporate trustee.
Right. Go to co-guardians, co-trustees. And, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't do this stuff. I personally am against co. I would do one or three. That's just me, because, you know, David and I, you know, if we're related.
Never have a tie vote.
Well, then you're having a fight. You see, and you try to do it as simple as possible. All of a sudden, I say we should be doing this. We should buy this apartment building. And you're saying we should buy a marina. Guess what? It's the two of us. We're just going to fight. And there's no way to break that. And that goes back to a parent. The parent should say, I know David and John don't get along in the first place. You have to be, that's my opinion, that I like
John,
a tiebreaker no matter what I do. Yeah.
I think it's a great point, and one of the ugliest cases I've ever been a part of is a case where a lady had her three sons as executors, and the three sons, of course, didn't speak to
the
each other, and they all had three extremely different personalities and backgrounds. I mean, one was very good with money, one himself had a disability, and the other just was, in a way, disassociated with the family. They each had their own attorney, me being one of them, and they didn't speak to each other. They didn't trust each other. It was the three attorneys.
Trying to hash it out.
So I'm actually a fan of just appointing one.
Oh, no, I think the one is the best.
You know,
if you can get away with
but
the one,
you're right.
I agree.
Three could be better than two. But,
but now you have a situation. No, see, that's a perfect – well, you came back with a perfect example. I'm thinking you have a tiebreaker, but all three fight. You're never going to get a consensus.
Again, every family is different.
Right. Well, I would guess in that – an attorney's, an important value of the attorney is to point out to these people, in other words, this is what you should think of. You make the decision, but consider these factors when you're making the decision.
No, that's what we do. And very rarely do I tell a client what to do. I tell them what to think about, what could happen. I explain to them that if these multiple people that you're appointing don't get along, then the only people that are going to benefit are the attorneys later on, and that's not
what they
want to have happen to their estate.
Well, actually, you know, I'm not taking anything from your profession, but no, your job is a therapist with legal knowledge.
That couldn't be more true, especially in the area of elder law and estate planning. I deal with families, and, you know, sometimes I think I should have a comfortable couch in my office.
Right, exactly.
Not just for me, but for my clients.
But that's what happens. But then that's what makes somebody in your field a success.
Yeah.
Because knowing the law perfect is useless if you can't implement it properly by you saying this is a rather unique family situation, which basically everyone is. And some of them you're not going to be able to help. Some of them you know that all four, five, six, whatever it is, come to the table with a different opinion. It's like, get ready for war. It's going to happen.
I've had clients in my office, 75, 80-year-old ladies who are in tears because they don't want to pick between their kids. They don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Right.
And, you know, my answer to them is you have to do what you think is best. You can't worry about somebody's feelings. And if you want to appoint somebody to a certain position, that's what you have to do.
Yeah, you're telling them the consequences of doing or not doing something.
Right, exactly.
Correct.
That's the biggest beat
of it. Be aware of.
Yeah, I agree with you. Perfect. On that, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Project Independence and You on 88.1 FM, and we're here with Andrew Lemkin, and we'll be right back.